Money Coming, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bank.
A very good Monday. Race fans, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM online and at the website, stevebick.com. And I hope everybody had a fabulous Father's Day in particular. We'll start with that, because on Friday we kind of finished with a flourish and sent you out into the weekend and into the last, what would it have been, the last 10 races from Royal Ascot. Clearly the highlight on that front, the performance, at least for North American audience and not North American fans, the effort by Spenderella for Gainsway and Graham Motion, that was something. And, of course, that was the last race that we're able to offer, and we're going to do some recapping, actually. Nick Luck going to join us in about 10 minutes, and we'll get the definitive wrap-up. Of course, Saturday, exciting as well, and not a particularly productive Ascot for the Wesley Ward team, but, you know, Wesley does an amazing job getting them there, and he'll get right on it for next year for sure, and continues to inspire owners and breeders and other outfits to consider this. Saturday, of course, the highlight, the big highlight, the Platinum Jubilee, and I'll save this. There's no reason for me to launch into it when we're going to get Nick to kind of summarize some of the best parts of the week. There were plenty. There were certainly no shortage of amazing moments. It really. I know it's not for everybody. In fact, that was Nick. It was our other Nick, Nick Tamro. Nick finds it kind of, a bit of a of a shoulder shrug. But I've come to really enjoy it. So Nick Luck to give us a nice wrap up when it comes to Royal Ascot this year. And when it came to the wagering side, it's funny, Kev, I'm sure Kev was a little disappointed the way things turned out. He had a bunch of $15 winners. He had at least one winner every single day, all 5 days, and he also had several each way cashers most of the days, and he had two winners, including the best price on Saturday at the end, actually, to wrap things up. But he lost the money on his wagers for the week. It was really the week in a lot of ways. That one pop, that giant pop from Vance Hansen. That was obviously. For those that jumped aboard quickly and punched it up, you did have a little bit of time to get that in. But anyway, we'll talk to Nick and we'll get his thoughts on the week. One thing that was certainly notable was just how incredible the weather was in terms of dry and hot, and they even relaxed. I don't know if you saw this. They even relaxed the dress code for the heat. Was that Friday or maybe on was that Saturday? I think it was Friday. I saw that they had announced after the royal procession that essentially I think men could doff their morning jackets. So that's like at Saratoga historically when Al Vanderbilt, when if Mr. Vanderbilt took off his jacket, everybody else in the boxes could. if he could tolerate the heat, you had to leave your jacket on. which is pretty funny. I haven't heard that discussed in a long time. So that'll be part of it. And then, of course, everything that went on, closing day yesterday at Santa Anita, and some nice prices. I mean, you had to really tap dance to find that force out 6,400. There was a decent, you know, that seemed to me that number for the four horses that you needed to have that were over $10. That you kind of thought would have thought, but it did pay to 400. And Steve Anderson put up the number 450, 475 tickets. So that's a nice redistribution of that money. There was a $300,000 carry, and they bet 10 times that. They bet $3.8 million, something like that. Some crazy number. So there were also some fun races, and that included, how about Neil Drysdale? Neil won his fifth San Juan Capistrano, the mile and three quarter standard. It's quite something. Five of them. And he did it in thrilling fashion, too. Tyler Bayes holding Breakpoint, that Chilean, holding him together. And Drysdale, he had a big day, actually. He ran second in the, I'm going to forget the name of the horse, he ran second in the American as well. And he won an allowance, too, early on the card. So a nice way to close out the meet for the Drysdale barn. And you had Phil D'Amato with Hong Kong Harry, who did win the American. And Leonard Powell with Neige Blanche, who, you know, basically gallivanted around in that possibly perfect. Pretty funny. But there was more. Well, Saturday's portion of the action. Monmouth, of course, the Monmouth preview card for Haskell, which was a lot of fun, and that included the do you call it a mild upset? I guess it is. It was upsetting, I can tell you that, having been alive to Hot Rod Charlie. Yeah, the mind control photo win over Hot Rod Charlie in the Salvatore Mile that ended that card at Monmouth on Saturday. Who was it? Nick Damrow. I think Nick said, "What are you playing around for? I mean, this is a horse that you need to just get him out on the lead and let him motor." But of course, Mind Control was going to. You knew Mind Control was going to be there in terms of, you know, the pace setting. So it's hard to say that, oh, you're getting cute, you know. But it's not that they got cute. I don't think that's fair. You know, I think they just, you know, they just, what's the point, I guess, of engaging immediately Mind Control? And I don't know. But those two, you know, that was... you know, considering that I for my own ticket, considering that, you know, Stolen Holiday for Shug, who did basically dictate on the front end, that was a nice ride by Jose Lascano. In fact, Lascano Saturday in Jersey, and then yesterday at Belmont for Gary Siaka and Eddie Eddie F's Racing, and of course, you know, Eddie F, the Seafood Emporium here in Saratoga. Eddie wins another stake with Dream Central. A tremendous ride in the Stallion Stake in the Cup of Coy's Joy. Terrific ride by Lascano. But he also dictated terms. He's very good on the front end with Stolen Holiday. And that was a decent, you know, that was a nice price. And we talked about that Friday in the Eatontown. And the difficult horse, of course, to come up with was the Wesley Ward in the first leg at Belmont of the cross country. And, boy, you know, I did a ticket where I singled Hot Rod Charlie and Sacred Life in the Monmouth. So I went 6x4x4x1x1. And I thought it was, you know, clever. For another $48, terrific hit. Anyway, the Mind Control race was with Hot Rod Charlie was exciting, and got people going. And they both ran big figs. 104 buyer out of that. Not to take away from those four stakes, Sacred Life and Stolen Holiday. How about the big blowout win in the three-year-old race in the Pegasus by Homebrew for Brad Cox? We'll talk to Brad tomorrow. We've been putting this off all, you know, for a week. But Brad, today at Churchill, they've got the HISA meeting. So the horsemen are going to be engaged in that. So we'll talk to Brad tomorrow. And there's a bunch of things now to catch up with him. And all of those stakes aside, Mind Control, Homebrew, Stolen Holiday, Sacred Life, the performance of the weekend was Friday. How about that Munnings filly? For Todd Pletcher, it was unbelievable. Money's gold. Crazy. 101 buyer. And who knows what this filly is? I can't wait to talk to Todd, who I think is back in available. He traveled last week after the Belmont win. So I think we'll ideally maybe get him maybe in hour three. I'm waiting to hear back. All right, so possibly, but I can't wait to hear about this filly. And this is it's actually an interesting backstory, a little bit with Money's Gold. The family is a Shadwell family, and in fact, the second dam, Kieran McLaughlin trained, was a nice Alcira, I think, and the dam that this one came out of was unraced, and it was a mare that was purchased by the breeders of this Money's Gold. So interesting story to find out more. And Bob and Luana Lowe purchase, and who knows what this is, but certainly the top two-year-old filly right now in the country, to say the least. Some of the other action, you touched on Santa Anita. I should mention, speaking of two-year-olds, that absolutely zero for Doug O'Neill and West Point and company. One that's selling, you know, the phasic Tipton Futurity. And when it came to the girls' race, Stone Silent for Sadler. The Adios Charlie with Ramon Vasquez and Sean McCarthy, who we're going to talk to. Sean McCarthy with another stake win, Private Mission. Won the Santa Maria on Saturday, and we're going to talk to Sean this morning. He's, you know, he's training those horses that came from the Baffert barn, and the last 3 weeks, getting into a very nice flow is Sean McCarthy. We're going to get into a flow with Nick Luck, and a week plus removed from the last time we spoke, and we previewed, of course, Royal Ascot, and it provided all of the usual thrills and interest. Nick, a terrific week. And although, you know, I was on the radio, so I didn't get to watch a lot of the TV coverage, everyone was cooing over the TV. So well done.
Oh, thank you, Steve. Yeah, no, it was a great week, and thoroughly enjoyed being able to help TVG and then NBC on Saturday bring some of it into U.S. homes, and clearly the international interest in the event is just growing every year.
Exactly. And, you know, it seems, you know, well removed now, but even if we just go back and really start from Tuesday and let's work our way through the 5 days, because as usual, there's that, you know, fascinating ebb and flow. And, you know, we look forward to the group ones, but, you know, any of these races can produce a tremendous story. And as usual, there was no shortage.
Yeah, no shortage. We started with a good, solid, you know, performance from Baid in the opening race. By the standards of any other race horse, I think, you know, the performance would be spectacular. But we've come to expect a really strong performance from him, and he delivered it. I thought the second Real World covered himself with perhaps even more credit than he had done when second to him at Newbury, and you know, that kind of set the tone really, and it was wonderful on that first afternoon to see such a dominant performance from Nature Strip. It was a shame that circumstances conspired against Golden Pal and he wasn't able to give his running, but boy oh boy, even if he had got out of the gate, I think he'd have had to have produced a career best by some considerable margin to get anywhere near that Australian sprinter, who not only produced one of the most impressive performances visually of the week, but one of the most impressive on the clock as well.
I suppose we might get part of the elephant out of the room right away, because it was certainly a week, and the early part of the week, Nick, that was dotted with some gate incidents. Let's just put them out there like that.
I'll come to the sort of idea that there might be a pattern in a minute, but certainly I think, you know, it was a baptism of fire for poor, you know, Irad Ortiz. I was really hoping that he could get a winner by the end of the week just to erase the memory of what happened on Golden Pal. But to his eternal credit, he just held his hands up and said it was his fault. Said, you know, he didn't realize that if there was a horse milling around out the back of the gate in the UK, it might be because the starter had taken the horse out. And so, because there was still a horse milling around out the back and it hadn't gone in, he thought that he wasn't ready. Simple as that. And then Golden Pal went up, and you know, he almost came off the side door. So, you know, that was pretty unfortunate, to say the least. I don't really think the starting team can be blamed for his failure to figure out what went on. It's just one of those things. I'm certainly not going to serve it up to him either. I mean, should he have been better prepared? Yeah, he should have done. But I don't know. I think it's just one of those circumstances that it's just hard to foresee. As far as other incidents that occurred, I didn't see what happened to Cardem, so I don't really know what happened there as far as going without the jockey on. I guess people are still looking back to William Buick and the incident in the stalls at Epsom, and you know, it might be that there's a bit of a perception building up that all is not well with starting procedures in the UK, and I think you have to sort of accept that might be how it looks. I don't think that there's anything wrong with the quality of the stall handlers here. I would, however, accept that there are more horses that misbehave at the gate here than there are in the US. Of course, we don't have a horse pony down for the start, and that there are more horses withdrawn at the start because they won't go in the gate. And, of course, the horses aren't routinely trained on the track. So, you know, that makes life a bit more difficult as well. I do think we could have more stall handlers. I think we need more bodies down there at the gate. And I think that was evident at Epsom. And that really is a question of finance. And obviously it's going to be better at Ascot than it is at most other fixtures. So I think there are some lessons to be learned there. But as far as Golden Pal is concerned, one of those freakish incidents that you can't really see coming.
Well, there was also the Lord North, the blindfold frustration.
That's got to be. I'm afraid that's got to be the jockey's fault. I mean, you know, I've very rarely seen that in the past, and I know handlers take blinds off in the US, but jockeys have always had the responsibility to get the blinds off properly in the UK, and. Yeah, they get fair warning to do so as well.
Well, aside from that, back to some of the action, and one of the highlights from day one with, of course, the three group ones, Nick, Joseph O'Brien and State of Rest. That obviously, it feels like a long time ago already, but you could see that was a really satisfying result for Joseph.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, we spoke a little bit about him last week, and even though he's a horse who's won at Cox Plate and he's won in Saratoga and he won the Prix Ganay, I think winning one of those big midsummer English or Irish group ones over 10 furlongs was a big deal for them reputationally and with his stallion career in mind as well. He got a wonderful ride from Shane Cross, there's no doubt about that. But having looked at it again a few times, even though he was the only horse, given the way the race panned out, that was able to really show himself off to his best ability, he really did stretch in the closing stages, and I didn't think Baybridge ever really looked as though he was going to get there. So, again, perhaps we should always be wary of damning this horse with faint praise. He's obviously incredibly tough, but also very talented.
And just to maybe pick up on a theme that I didn't really see celebrated much, but I did notice after day one, Carl Burke on a regular basis. It seemed like he had a tremendous stand.
Yeah, he did. And it must be doubly satisfying for a trainer when a horse wins and they've called it. They've called it so dogmatically. He said dramatized, probably one of the best two-year-olds I've ever trained, certainly one of the fastest fillies at this stage. He was putting a lot of pressure on himself, probably unnecessarily, but he was proven right, and proven right in spades. He absolutely nailed that. And the two-year-old that won first time up was sensational. I mean, that's a remarkable achievement. The story that they only went because the owner got turned away from getting a corporate box and wanted to run the horse because he'd get the ticket. I mean, it's a nice story. You sort of thought that it was probably a half truth, given the fact that he was bet from 100 into 40 in what looked a really deep running of the Chesham. You sense there might have been a bit of artistic license with that story. But Burke is no, Johnny come lately. He's an exceptional trainer. He's trained a ton of Group 1 winners, and he's always been very good with two-year-olds. So he knows what he's got. If he pitches up to Ascot with a first-time-out horse, then, I don't think any of us thought he'd win, but we probably thought, well, he must have shown above-average ability to be turning up here, because he's not the sort of trainer who's going to want to see a horse finishing tailed off or embarrassed.
Well, speaking of which, one thing, I mean, we mentioned the Joseph O'Brien win, and Little Big Bear won the Windsor Castle, and the Aidan O'Brien camp on a steady drumbeat day after day, Nick, I mean, just made the presence felt. Not that that's a surprise to anybody, but I thought they had a particularly strong meet without a lot of fanfare.
I'm kind of in agreement, Steve, and that's because you and I spoke about this very theme last week, and we said, look at what they've got. They've not really got anything in the Queen Anne. They've not really got anything in the Prince of Wales. They're not, that stellar team of older horses that you associate with Ballydoyle isn't really there. The three-year-olds, well, they're not nothing much to write home about, are they? Really, they're heavily reliant on the two-year-olds. And when the first two-year-olds got beaten, I thought, well, this is going to be a disappointing week. And I think where Aidan can feel really happy is not just that he got a couple of exciting two-year-olds over the line, particularly I thought the Albany Stakes winner, Meditate, I thought she was very, very good. But he got horses like Broom to win, against top competition. And he got a horse like Kiprioff to win the Gold Cup, having never really shone in three previous visits to the UK. That he'd been planning that for a long time. These we knew were good horses, but I think that will have pleased him. When on paper he didn't have the sort of Galactico, he didn't have the sort of all conquering squad that he sometimes does. To still walk away as the leading trainer of the meet, it took a little bit of doing, particularly with a bang on point Charlie Appleby against him.
Conversely. you could sense, not that, you know, not that there's a way to quantify it, but you could sense as the week was getting going, and it took till Thursday before John Gosden and Frankie Dettori were able to make a mark.
Yeah, and of course that's probably the most intriguing. That's probably the most intriguing narrative of the week, isn't it? The tension between Gosden and Dettori that bubbled up after the sort of trio of disasters that were Stradivarius, Saga, and Reach for the Moon, all for different reasons. And you can kind of ascribe different levels of blame to Dettori for each of those. But, you know, these are three horses that were either expected to win or could have won in different circumstances. And it all took place in about an hour and a half. And, you know, tensions boiled, not boiled over, but Gosden let everybody know exactly what he thought, you know, and having you know, to coin the common parlance, thrown Dettori under the bus, be unsubtly on the Thursday, he was in no mood to retrieve him from under the wheels on Friday, even after Dettori had won on Inspiral. You know, he was still giving interviews to Sky Sports Racing, saying, and ITV saying, you know, our hero overcomplicated things yesterday and he should have won on Saga, etc. So, whatever reason, the relationship between them is clearly a little more strained at the moment than sometimes it is. Now, Gosden would say this is just part of the warp and weft of relations between two men who've been on and off together for, you know, three decades, you know, in various incarnations, and that part of the secret to their success is that they can speak their mind and speak openly and say what they want. And there's no doubt some truth in that. But it was quite notable how Dettori wasn't getting a retrieve from his governor the following day.
And let's talk about Inspiral, who was unbelievable. And, you know, as many people were crediting Graham Motion and the Gainsway undefeated filly Spenderella, who probably wins that race, what, 93 times out of 100 in normal years?
I said to Graham, you know, would it make you feel any better if I told you, you know, you win 7 out of 10 Coronation Stakes? And, you know, he said, no, not really. You know, he was obviously incredibly proud of his filly who'd given everything. But, you know, he's a steely competitor, Graham. And, you know, there was more than one tear in his eye afterwards, that's for sure. I think he found the whole experience pretty emotionally draining, but he definitely wants to be back. I think it's only strengthened his resolve to come back, and she ran a wonderful race. But yeah, we were talking about this in terms of either Inspiral comes back and is the Inspiral who was champion European Juvenile, or she comes back and she's not quite what she was, or, you know, injury has taken its toll, or, you know, she's not quite ready on her seasonal debut. And, you know, if it meant that everything else had roughly an equal chance, and you could put a dart in and decide where you wanted to go and how you wanted to play the race. But she answered that question, you know, in absolutely emphatic fashion. I thought she was absolutely brilliant. I thought it was, you know, that and Nature Strip were the two performances of the week. You know, and to come back off that layoff and just completely pulverize the field. Interesting, Chris Richardson, the Cheveley Park stud racing manager, said today that he felt that she was the best filly they'd ever had.
Well, yikes!
When you think about, I know. When you think about the list of good ones they've had, it stretches long now back to Russian Rhythm and Echelon and Chic and Queen's Trust, and the list is endless of really good fillies that Cheveley Park have either raced or bred. And actually, when you look at it, yes, she probably is the best. And, you know, two Gosden-trained fillies by Frankel have won, three Royal Fillies by Frankel have won Group 1s just this week, with Nashua winning the Prix de Diane at Chantilly yesterday under Holly Doyle.
Well, one thing that you referenced that we should slip in, and I'm just kind of, now I'm kind of jumping around a little bit, but go back to the Gold Cup for a second, Nick, because Kiprios, that's a performance that hasn't really, and I guess part of it is the Stradivarius focus, but that really hasn't gotten the notoriety you would expect.
Yeah, I don't know how good a race it was, but there were too many other horses who really aren't Group 1 horses a little bit too close for my mind, and there was no doubt part of that was a function of the muddling pace in the race, but still, I didn't think it was a goal cut right out of the top draw. That said, Kiprios is still a young and improving horse, and he's been minded through his career. He's from a family that improved with age, and you can see Aiden bringing him back, campaigning him sparingly, and just bringing him back, you know, each and every year, really. It's not going to be difficult to work out where to run him. My feeling was that even if a muddling pace undid Stradivarius tactically, because it meant that Satori got locked in a pocket, having broken well and shuffled back, I'm not sure it would have been to Kiprios' liking either, and I very much got that sense from Ryan Moore afterwards. I know it was a brilliant ride from Moore because he was pushing along to keep Satori in, and he knew he had to get first run. But if it had been an electric gallop from the outset, a real end-to-end test, I think Kiprios would have been an even more decisive winner, because all he does is keep galloping and keep staying, and I think that the race would have fallen apart to a greater extent. So, yeah, he is a horse that deserves a bit of credit, just not sure how strong the race was.
There were a couple of notable moments, at least for us, because, you know, we get to play races 1 through 4 each morning, and live on the show here, Nick, Vance Hansen of Twin Spires and Brisnet gave out the Riddler in the Norfolk and explained why. Unbelievable.
What a And of course, those of us who are nose to the grindstone, ask it, Steve, don't have the luxury of being able to have the time to tune in to your show. So, you know, it kind of cuts both ways, this. Boy, I wish I had. I mean, that's a great call. I mean, it does help when you wipe half the field out inside the last half furlong. But at 50 to 1, you don't mind about that.
Well, talk about it now as well. Yes, talk about it, because you were a big help, apparently, because people that were watching the telecast were sending me notes as we were sweating out the inquiry, and someone said that, you know, Nick just explained there hasn't been a takedown since 2009, and talk about, I don't know if you want to talk category one, category two, but explain.
Yeah. There are plenty of takedowns every day of the week here. That's not the issue. The issue is, the way the rules are structured, has there been interference? Yes. Who's caused interference? The winner. Who's he caused it to? The horses that finished third and fourth. Now, the first thing you want to ask yourself is, might, on the balance of probability, either the third or fourth finish in front of the winner, but for that interference? Now, on the balance of the probability, you kind of knew that the stewards were going to say, well, no, they probably wouldn't. So then you have the only other way of getting the winner chucked out is on the gravity of the riding offence. And for careless and or improper riding, you suspend the jockey for as long as the rules allow you to, but you don't disqualify the horse. The only way you get the horse disqualified solely on a riding offence is for dangerous riding. And there hasn't been a dangerous riding chuck out since 2009. So we knew it was pretty unlikely that he'd get done for dangerous riding. Because you have to, I think, you know, you have to have been shown to be sort of deliberately malicious in your intent, I think, to get done for dangerous riding. I'm quite surprised he didn't get done for improper riding, but that's irrelevant for this debate, because even if he had, it still wouldn't have meant that the horse would have been thrown out. He got 10 days. They could have given him 14 days under the rule they charged him with, and I'm surprised they didn't, because it's as bad, if you're going to call it careless riding, it's as bad an egregious example of careless riding as I can really remember. Especially in a race of that gravity, and especially with two-year-olds, inexperienced horses, and on a big stage like that. And I think you have to take all that into account. And, I think he was quite fortunate to get away with what he got. Now, the nice bit of the story is, in a sense, from a human perspective, is that Richard Fahey had fired Paul Hannigan. and the owners have decided they wanted him to still ride the horse, and he's come and won a race for his longtime boss kind of a week after he's been fired. So you kind of felt for Paul, who's a very nice man. But on the other hand, it's sort of weird. Sort of ironically, you feel that this ride that should have been a story of great redemption for his career might actually, in the long term, have won him a few more antagonists than it has friends, as regards, you know, people who are going to put him up in future in a big race.
Well, and now you're making me want to ask about a few riders who gained some attention and some spotlight out of the week, some isolated wins. Nick, I thought Shane Foley. I kept sort of noticing him and Sean Levy, and then of course Haley Turner. You could see how delighted she was with the win on Latin Lover in the Holyrood House.
Yeah, all sorts of different stories there. I mean, Shane Foley is a top-class rider and has been for quite some time. I was quite surprised when I looked down and saw it was his first Ascot winner. I was quite surprised when I saw it was Joseph O'Brien's first Royal Ascot winner as a trainer.
Yep.
Given how much he'd achieved. Jessica Harrington's horses ran pretty well all week. You know, Discoveries ran okay in the Coronation Stakes. Cadillac ran really well. And then Magical Lagoon won the Ribblesdale, of course. That was a good ride from Shane Foley, you're right. Shane Cross, obviously on State of Rest, that was a wonderful ride. We've spoken about that. Sean Levy, long time, you know, integral cog in the Hannon wheel. You know, he's a rider who's already had a classic winner. So that wasn't before time on Heredia, who had loads and loads in hand. Danny Tudhope, again, it's not the first time at Royal Ascot. He knocked in a ton of winners at Ascot 3 years ago, and he's done so again. He's just got a very, very cool temperament for the big occasion. He doesn't have to worry about doing light weights, which of course has probably meant that his career has been, you know, not half as successful, but he'd have had 1.5 times more rides if he was a bit lighter than he has. It's just a function of speed. He probably would have been numerically been championship. But he's an incredibly good rider and very, very much a man for the big occasion.
And the other other name too, Tom Marquand, I thought seemed to a couple different times. I know he had that was a repeat win, right? Was it Candleford? Yeah, Candleford was a repeater in the Duke of Edinburgh.
No, he wasn't a repeater, but he gave him
repeater?
There were two repeaters. There was Rohan in the Wokingham and Stratham in the Queen Alex. They were both coming back
and winning
the same race for the second consecutive year. But you rarely get an Ascot go by where, you know, William Haggis doesn't produce some sort of horse that's incredibly well handicapped from out of somewhere. And you know, he did that again. Mind you, Steve, I think you or I could have ridden Candleford. He had that much in hand.
We shouldn't let this come to an end without noting the 1-2 for Appleby and Godolphin, that Naval Crown and Creative Force, and it really continues. And of course, earlier on the card, Noble Truth had won the Jersey, but it just kind of continues this. How many years now? It's like 2 years going that Godolphin on an international stage just keeps winning.
Yeah, quite notable that. It's funny because Appleby's emerged from the week with a ton more prize money in the back, having won more Group 1s than anyone else, and, you know, looking like he'll end up being champion trainer again this year. But I still maintain that they're not quite as dominant as they were, you know, form-wise at the beginning of the season. So Karibus has won the St. James's Palace, but he wasn't very impressive. And given that he found the scene really on what you knew of him already, you'd rather hope that he'd go and kick away and really make mincemeat of those, but he didn't. He still won, albeit fortuitously, because Mal June was very unlucky. And yeah, he got the first and second in the Platinum Jubilee. And I'm not saying that wasn't a very good bit of training. It was, but it was the kind of race that who was in front when the music stopped, because there were about 10 who could have won. You could run that 10 different times and get 10 different results. So, but he's come up smelling of roses again, and, you know, good. Fair play to him. Yeah, it'll count as another excellent Royal Ascot for Charlie. And a couple of disappointments along the way. Hurricane Lane, I know he'd been off a long time, but I think you could realistically expect him to run better, even though it was the fastest ground he'd raced on. And that's the area of concern for him this season. these three good older horses from last year. Yabir has been rather reluctant. Adair we haven't seen at all. Hurricane Lane didn't exactly pull up trees on his comeback. And that's the area where you thought he was going to really be strong. And it's an area where they've come up a bit short. By contrast, the good three-year-old milers have all, you know, won all the big races. You know, they've won three guineas in the St. James's Palace between them.
Nick, it was a lot of fun, and it seems to really captivate, and my audience seems to, you know, just really enjoy it, and I suppose you deserve a lot of the credit for that over the years, over a decade or so of, you know, getting people interested and you know, the continuity, and, you know, then you fold in the American assault here, and what we have, Rusty Arnold and Graham and Wesley, you know, every year now there's, you know, 8 to 10 North American connected horses, and that's adding to the interest. And what it does is it also feeds into Breeders' Cup, really, and we get familiar with some horses that we'll see at the end of the year, particularly the two-year-olds.
Yeah, I think that's right. I'd be amazed if the Riddler, your friend the Riddler, didn't bowl up at the Breeders' Cup. Far he's been a few times before, and he likes it, so I'd be pretty surprised if he didn't show. You know, and there's plenty of others that will have run at that meet turn up. I mean, I think the win in your inns this year, they've not dropped perfectly as Breeders' Cup win in your inns, but that's only because of circumstances, because, of course, like state of rest, I don't think they'll stretch him out beyond 10 furlongs. It's not impossible, but I don't think they will. So, you know, unless he ends up in a classic or something like that, which I suppose is not impossible, I don't see it as an obvious slot for him to go to the Breeders' Cup turf when he could go back to the Cox Plate. The Queen Anne Baid, well, you'd love to see Baid in the Breeders' Cup mile. But again, I think, you see, the plan, I think, will be to step him up to a mile and a quarter around about Judmont International time. And then I'm not sure they would then cut back for a Breeders' Cup mile. But again, I could be wrong. And you're not going to find the Aussie Sprinter coming. So, yeah, I think of the four winning your inns, you're likeliest to get the two-year-old.
That's fine. That's fine. Well, Nick, I, as always, just thank you so much. And between you and, you know, just great. Nick Luck, everybody. And you're following Nick, of course. And we will catch up with him later this summer as we get towards Saratoga and the like. Nick, be well. We'll talk soon.
Steve, thank you so much.
Always great. Nick Luck, everybody. There you go. And there's your Royal Ascot coverage, as I mentioned, with Kev, who, you know, had winners. He had plenty of winners, including that Stratham at the end to close things out. I don't have the prices. One thing I kept forgetting to print out the, if you don't print it out, you know, that day, and there's no, they don't chart the way, you know, the way we're used to, of course, in New York, but in the U.S. So, but yeah, whether you even bet at all, or whether you had a couple of nice pops, or you caught the Riddler, I think part of the appeal of the whole thing with the Riddler is the name. It says that it's the Riddler. So that, I think that contributes, right, you know, to how much fun it was. I felt bad that the Queen, in fact, Nick referenced that the Queen had two really good chances. And, of course, Reach for the Moon was what, 2-5 when Claymore, which was another, frankly, that's another of the nice wins that Vance Hansen offered up, 6-1, right, for Claymore? Yeah, 14-70, I think. But Reach for the Moon for the Queen, Gosden and Dottori. And that Saga, who was run down by Thesis, you might remember. And that was the noon race on, was that the second day? I think it was the second day. And, right? Was that, yeah, I think it was the second day. There we go. Yeah. the Britannia. And it was, it's funny because the call, you know, when those horses are the way they're bunched up and they're in those two divisions most often, it's got to be hard. It's got to be a very difficult for the race callers. And I actually, and people discussed how frustrating it was to follow one of the negatives, I guess, is the way to phrase it, was that people can't follow their horse. And so if they bet, and especially because the camera angle is so difficult, and, you know, so often, you know, when they're on the straight runs, the mile or the six furlongs, you just don't have the camera angle to even make out numbers. So you basically have to, you have to get a feel for the silks and the cap. And when it comes to the Queen's colors, it's pretty easy with that purple jacket and the scarlet sleeves. And I was watching Saga in that Britannia, and the caller actually missed Saga and really did not, you know, see, you know, slicing through and getting, you know, to the lead and looking like a potential winner. And at the same time, Thesis was rallying wider, and the guy only caught Saga in the final strides. But I actually watched him from the back of the pack, and Dettori kind of was floating, waiting to make a decision to go left or right, depending on who was tiring in front of him. And I don't know what else he really. It wasn't like he was held up much. It was making, you know, a steady advance. Didn't, you know, it wasn't without, you know, without a pause here or there. But I don't know what else Gosden would have wanted Dettori to do on Saga. Thesis had a, and Ryan Moore had a very clear, they had, you know, not the, the proverbial straw in their path. But anyway, I would have been nice on this Jubilee celebration that's been ongoing, that for the Queen to win one at Ascot. And she came, you know, very close to a double with Saga and Reach for the Moon back to back. And then the third horse in the Buckingham Palace. That was the, was that the last? She had a horse, I think, in there too. She had no shortage. She had Tactical as well, earlier in the card. Or was that the, was that, let me see the six. No, that was it, actually. Tactical was the other horse and ran six. So second, and sixth in that late pick three. So, all right, Royal Ascot in the books for another year. Coming up toward the top of the hour, Sean McCarthy is going to join us. And Johnny, we'll get Johnny D in. Rich Migliori as well today. Andrew Offerman. You heard me mention, I think, near the end of the show on Friday, that we were looking forward to a big midweek card. And if you haven't looked yet at Canterbury for Wednesday, it is Mystic Lake Derby Day, and they've got a fabulous card. The stake sequence, the third through the eighth, and this will be fun. We're going to talk to Andrew and basically just get caught up. We talked to him at, you know what, 6 weeks ago at the start of the meet, and things, you know, going nicely. The Curtis Sampson, the Oaks race, going the mile on the grass, and the Dark Star, which is the turf sprint. You've got the Minnesota, the Stallion Stake, the Stallion Auction, just a, you know, kind of a little little sprint on the dirt. The Lady Canterbury, which is the mile, which is the configuration and distance that you see the most on this card, because the Derby's that distance as well as the mile. But the Lady Canterbury, which is the fillies and mares going a mile, and the boys' race, the mile, which drew a dozen, and full fields, should be great. The Derby, did I? I can't remember. I guess I didn't. No, I don't think I did. And now with the morning line set, Greg Foley shows up, and Foley, of course, winning races in bunches with that nice Stitched that we've talked about with him. This is the horse that won the Caesars for Nathan McCauley and partners. There's a homebred of McCauley's, the Mizzenmast colt, you'll recall. And 5-2 favorite in here, Duagic Chief for Amos and Mike McLaughlin. Tried the American Turf. That was a little too deep. And, of course, it won the Black Gold earlier this winter. You're getting 4-1. 5-1, Heaven Street. This is Brendan Walsh for Sienna. And Steve Asmussen trained this one as a 2-year-old. Christophe Clement had Heaven Street early this winter and then got over to Brendan String at Keeneland. Looks like late April after the race in New York when Heaven Street tried the Woodhaven. So Heaven Street in here, 5-1. Javier Castellano in town to ride. Giroux is going to ride Stitched. And Relu Gutierrez gets aboard Duagic Chief. Dave Van Winkle, who, of course, is a steady winner at Canterbury. Van Winkle's got Ben's Malice. This is for Peter Mattson, the prominent breeder, a Palace Malice gelding out of a Scat Daddy mare, coming off of an allowance win against the Minnesota Breds, and so forth. Mac Robertson can't run a card like this without a without a heavy dose of Mac Robertson. Let me see how many races Mac is in. He's in the 3rd, 4th, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th. So the only stake he's not participating in is the Stallion auction stake, the 5th. I'm sure there's a few, when it comes to some of the older ones, I'm sure there's a few Mac Robertsons that are fan favorites. There's two Emmys in the mile. Mr. Dumas, actually, for John Ortiz in there, too. This is, boy, the mile came up really good. Wow. Street Ready shows up for Mean Wilkes. Spanish Kingdom for Joe Sharp. Joe Sharp's got quite a few in on this card. Two Emmys. Mr. Dumas. Tut's Revenge. Clinton Stewart. Dino Might for Keith DeSormo. It's a very good card, and we're going to handicap it certainly tomorrow, and probably see who's. I'm going to guess Marcus. Not sure who's doing the advance work, but we'll get a set of opinions in from a couple different. Couple different sources, all right? Kevin Gord is going to join us tomorrow. We'll talk to Kevin as well. So looking forward to giving you the Mystic Lake Derby action. The card starts at 6:10 Eastern Time on Wednesday. And the stake sequence starts at 7:10. So the Oaks, 13 in the Oaks, 12 in the Dark Star, 8 in the Stallion Sprint, 12 in the Lady Canterbury, 12 in the Mile, 11 in the Derby. let's see, in terms of the let's see the sequences, there is a there is that 10% takeout pick five, but it actually goes the 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th. It doesn't the 9th and 10th after the Derby, just some standard. There's a claimer sprint, and there's a Minnesota bred claiming sprint after the Derby. So the pick five is three stakes and the two sprint races. The all stakes action would be a pick four, the 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th. And should actually in advance of the conversation too with Andrew, let's take a look at what and we're supposed to get another hot week, right? Well, actually, the good news is the heat is really today in Shakopee, and then Wednesday into the evening. It looks like by 6 o'clock, the high is 85 degrees, and there's absolutely no chance of rain the next 3 days. So the turf races are absolutely something freaky would have to happen. So you can count on those turf races at Canterbury on Wednesday night. And it looks like it is going to get cool. It's going to cool down, but it's going to be in the mid-80s to start the night. So I'm sure they will get a mammoth crowd. We'll get all the details in about 35 minutes or so from Andrew Offerman at Canterbury Park. We're going to talk to Johnny in a little bit. Before that, we will visit with Sean McCarthy, who I'm looking forward to. I haven't talked to Sean in forever. And, of course, he and Tim Yakteen have had the very, frankly, it's a weird conversation, right? Is it the unenviable task, or is it the nice opportunity to take over the Baffert horses? And Baffert, the Baffert suspension ends in a couple of weeks, July 3rd, I believe. And so in the meantime, Sean McCarthy, who now has had the group of horses that he has, he's had them for a good 6-8 weeks. And they're all starting to really run well. In some cases, they had a start, and they, he's kind of feeling his way. And then now he's sending out stake winners pretty steadily. That Private Mission won the Santa Maria, as I mentioned. If you go back to last week, he won one on both Saturday and Sunday. He won that Summertime Oaks with Under the Stars. He won the Affirmed with Hopper, and a lot of these were horses were Baffert runners that were kind of late getting to the races and really had not when it comes to the 3 year olds. So and then I'm going to have to ask Sean. I mean, what the expectation is? Is he going to be able to continue with some of these horses? Are some going to be left with him? He certainly, you would think, deserves it, and especially the way they're running here, with a little bit of time and with the attention he's been providing. So we're going to talk to him shortly. A couple of other stake results that I want to slip in before we go to the break. And we do have to catch up with Chad Brown this week and talk about his terrific Belmont weekend, and then he came right back and Sacred Life in the Monmouth, and also Masson in the Poker, who pretty much loomed way the most of us singled right in that spot. Two results from Friday night that I got to mention. You had the two more of the Match Series races that we did not get a chance to talk about at Penn National. And how about New York Traffic? New York Traffic and Safi Joseph for John Finelli and partners, Cassius King involved, and LC Racing and Paul Braverman, Team Hanley. New York Traffic feels like he's kind of back in a nice groove. Earlier in the winter, he didn't look so great in that Gulfstream Mile when he came back for his 5-year-old debut, but now he's won two straight. And with some very clever placement, because he went to New York and he won the Affirmed Success, and now he comes back and he won the Chocolate Town. 97 Buyer winning. And how about that Fee d'Esprit in the Susquehanna Valley for Jerry Robb and the X-Man, and she's five or six, and it, I think that she ran a career best. She went off at second choice. I mean, obviously New York Traffic was, he was the 1-2 favorite, but Fee d'Esprit, this was a career best by a long way. 99 Buyer for her. And last seen Pimlico in the ski pat behind Joy's Rocket. So she's nice. Nice sprint. Jerry Robb is terrific. And while we're on the Mid-Atlantic swing, before we take the break, let's head to the break case. And as we do that, I got to give out a big congrats to our friend and the excellent horseman, Mike Lassesi. How about Lassesi yesterday? Nick Papagiorgio, 13-1. In fact, there were nothing but upsets in the three Laurel Stakes yesterday. Nick Papagiorgio with Hector Karamanos, a terrific effort and a terrific ride if you haven't watched this race. This was in the fine stakes, 29-20 for owner Lou Biso Jr. So congratulations to Mike. Mike, you know, when we've had horses to send to Finger Lakes, Mike has handled them. He's won a lot of races for a lot of years. That was in the find. Then you had the 10-1 upset. Bill Mott at 10-1. Poppy Flower, the Lee Philly for Arnmore, and Victor Carrasco, 22-20, winning the Stormy Blues. This is a horse that Wesley had trained, and Bill Mott's had her now for two starts. This was the 3-year-old group going 5.5 on the grass and upset Derry Name of Clemence. Poppy Flower. And then you had another upset in the third stake, which was the All Brandy. Jesus Cruz for Wasabi, a McGinnis bred Tapiture filly. Why Not Tonight? Under Angel Cruz. 7-1. So some, and they were all big fields too. 12, 9, and 11. So some good action in those Laurel Stakes yesterday. I got plenty of others. I got the Churchill stuff to talk about. Nice 2-year-old yesterday for, do you see that? For Mick Ruiz, a homebred that Chris Hartman's training for. Bolts and Rainbows. So 4.5, so, you know, ways to go. All right. What else we got? Josie Carroll. Josie Carroll. Mason's Gamble in the yesterday in the Ontario Jockey Club up at Woodbine. Woodbine's starting to get rolling. There was also the Texas action. And, of course, we're keeping an eye. We got, what, 10 days? It seems before the wagering whistle blows, maybe, at Lone Star in Texas. We'll see. See what happens there. So. That's the highlight. Ronnie Spatz won the game face with Last Leaf down at Gulfstream as well. There you go. Another one. Kind of thumbing through here. We'll get it all in. Todd Pletcher, by the way, confirmed tomorrow for TA, for T. Pletch, as my man Joe Bianco famously called him. Yo, T. Pletch, what up? Back after this, Sean McCarthy, Johnny D., Andrew Offerman, Rich Migliori. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Pons Family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Horse racing fans, major daytime Southern California thoroughbred racing returns to Los Alamitos Racecourse with the LA County Fair Meet. Opening day is Saturday, June 25th. The opening day card will be headed by the Bertrando Stakes. Plus, the daytime meet will also feature a special holiday racing program on Monday, 4th of July. The 4th of July card will be headed by the Grade 2 Great Lady M Stakes. Past winners of this outstanding race for fillies and mares include champions Gamine and Finest City and the outstanding Marley's Freedom. And horse players, the 4th of July program will also feature a popular live money on-track handicapping contest. You could win one of two berths to the 2023 National Handicapping Championship in Las Vegas. The contest format is available at losalamitos.com. Plus, our day and night weekend doubleheaders also return as our live quarter horse and thoroughbred nighttime action will follow the daytime cards. Watch all the action on TVG or at your favorite satellite facility or ADW provider. The LA County Fair Meet at Los Alamitos Racecourse. 9 days of great racing. Opening day is Saturday, June 25th. For more, visit losalamitos.com.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use...